Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Guillermo Amaral joins me. We're going to be talking about monitoring your systems to make sure they stay up and running. We're going to be talking about Istinga, something like that. We'll get it right later. You don't want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Guillermo Amaral. Episode 354, recorded September 16th, 2015. Itinga. This episode is brought to you by DigitalOcean, simple and fast cloud hosting built for developers. Deploy an SSD cloud server in 55 seconds. Try it today for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com, and once you sign up, be sure to enter the promo code FLOSS in the billing section for a $10 credit. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, open-source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at StoneAge.com, bringing to you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, the little projects, projects you may be using every day and unaware of it, projects you might want to be downloading right after the show and go play with. I get that all the time. It's a lot of fun. I'm coming to you from beautiful downtown Santa Monica. You might have recognized the background from before. Cloudy, cloudy, cloud. Bunch of clouds back there, but this is not a cloud show. It's a great show. We're going to be talking about Istinga, but before I get started on that, let me bring on my co-host Guillermo Amaral. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Randall. I also have clouds outside. Is this a cloud show today? Or
no, it's not a cloud show. It's just that I happen to have this wonderful background that shows real-time Santa Monica clouds. I'm actually at ZipRecruiter on the second floor now, not on the third floor like I was in the other location. But no, great. And you're coming to us from your usual spot?
Yeah, same spot in Tijuana, Mexico. It's rainy today, hence the cloud talk.
Oh, right. You know, they got 2 inches of rain here in L.A. yesterday, and it sort of it made some people very happy. It made almost everybody else really angry, and there were a lot of people calling in sick yesterday. People don't even want to be out in the rain in L.A., which is really weird. I don't understand that.
That makes a lot of sense, I suppose.
I'm an Oregonian. I love the rain. And so it was no problem to me at all, except when we had to forge that new creek that was on the I-10 exit, which was really crazy. Anyways, we have a really interesting show today. We have Istinga, which I've been mispronouncing for the last 7 shows, I now realize. And Istinga is a fork of Nagio. Some of you may be pretty familiar with Nagio, especially if you're in the DevOps or sysadmin area. It's a monitoring system to be able to make sure that your systems are up and running and doing what they're supposed to. So you basically set up a bunch of tests and say, is my web server up? Is it responding to a web page? Is my database up? Is it responding to queries? Is the system even up at all? Do I have network connectivity? And then you have it, as it continually monitors that stuff, send off like pager duty messages or other sorts of messages when things go wrong, and be able to notify that and keep track of that, have a dashboard that shows, you know, how much uptime we've actually had over the last 24 hours, if we have some sort of SLA, that sort of thing. That's Nagio. It's been around for a long time. Originally called NetSaint, but that's also a separate issue that probably won't come up again in this show. But about 3 years ago, I forget my notes now. Sorry, about 3 years ago, it was forked to create Istinga. And we're going to talk today with one of the project leads of the Istinga project. I hope I pronounced it right, Bernd Erk. I'll bring him on in a few minutes. But we're going to talk about what it is, because Istinga has basically started out just as a fork of Nagios, but they've done a lot of things with it since. And in fact, they're doing a complete rewrite now for Istinga 2, and we'll talk about how that all happened around. But I want to also get to the notion at least a couple times in the show about what it's like to have an open source project and when do you fork and why? Because that's happened a lot, especially as we were talking with all the different projects that forked after Sun was taken over by Oracle. There's like 6 projects there that were all sort of hostily forked, and I'm just going to invent the term pitchfork for that. So I may use that term once or twice later in the show as well, and I hope people take that term on. I really like it. What do you know about Istinga so far there, Guillermo?
Well, I guess most of the things I know about it is that it's a monitoring tool, and since I don't do that much sysadmin work anymore, I don't really use it, but I do find this whole pitchforking thing interesting, so I'm here.
Yeah. Okay. Right. And one of the things I also want to disclose is that actually some of my coworkers from here at ZipRecruiter are actually watching the show. They're in the chat room right now, And it's because we actually, we being ZipRecruiter, uses Isinga for that. We just upgraded from Isinga 1 to 2. And so that's something I want to talk about with our guest as well, about why the templating language, apparently templating language is crazy for Isinga 2. So I need to go find out about that. And I'm using Nagios right now for my other primary client, the cruise guy, Neil Bauman. And we're gonna side grade to Isinga 1 and then upgrade to Isinga 2 coming up soon for our monitoring there. All right, but that's enough about us. We really want to get into the show because this should be a really interesting topic in a moment. But first, I have a very important message. It turns out that whether you're an experienced code warrior or just getting started, you need flexible, reliable, and affordable hosting. DigitalOcean provides developers with Droplets, which are virtual private servers that can be customized and deployed quickly to host websites, web apps, production applications, personal projects, virtual desktops, and almost anything else you can think of with full root access. I myself am a DigitalOcean client. I found out about them back in February thanks to Scale. I got a little code that allowed me to try it out for free, and we'll have one of those for you in just a moment. And I've powered it up, and 55 seconds later, I had a server running, and it's running on an SSD drive. It's very, very fast. I'm using it as my build machine for my FreeBSD packages, so I can customize the package whatever way I want. And then my main machine can then load from there. I don't have any worries about my main machine going down, and therefore I can't build anymore. So it's really cool. DigitalOcean is built for developers and used by over 400,000 of them, as I said, including me. You can choose your OS, Ubuntu, CentOS, Debian, Fedora, CoreOS, and FreeBSD. That's my choice. And your one-click install allows you to quickly deploy apps like Django, Docker, Drupal, LAMP, GitLab, MediaWiki, Node.js, WordPress, Ghost, Magento, OwnCloud, Ruby on Rails, and more. And all the servers are built on hex core machines with dedicated ECC RAM and RAID SSD storage. Servers can have up to 20 CPUs, 64 gigs of RAM, and 640 gigs of SSD hard drive space. A very active community as well, with a large and dedicated set of tutorials and all the ways you can use your Droplet. Want to deploy Docker? Set up a mail server? They have you covered. And it's so easy to get started, you can deploy an SSD cloud server in as little as 55 seconds. So DigitalOcean has incredibly affordable and straightforward pricing. Servers start at only $5 per month. There's also hourly pricing available starting at less than a penny an hour. But we're going to make it so you can get started today and deploy an SSD cloud server for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com and create an account. Once you confirm your email and account information, go to the billing section and enter the promo code FLOSS for a free $10 credit. There's plenty to get started and explore what DigitalOcean can do. That's DigitalOcean.com. And once you sign up, enter the code FLOSS in the billing section for a $10 credit. And we appreciate DigitalOcean for their support of Floss Weekly. And now let's go ahead and bring on our guest. Bernd, welcome to the show.
Welcome. How are you doing today?
I'm doing really well. And where are you speaking to us from?
I'm sitting in Nuremberg, south of Germany, Bavaria.
Very cool. I think I've flown over that area. I'm not sure I've actually been right there. I've been sort of on the northern coast of Germany. Oh, no, wait. I went down the Rhine. So I probably went sort of to the east of you, I guess. No, the west of you. Yes.
Yeah. Let's say compared to the US, everything is close in Germany. So, yeah, it's close.
Awesome. Awesome. And so I gave what I believed Isinga to be a fairly good description. But why don't you give us the 30,000-foot view? What problem does Isinga solve?
So that overview is that Isinga solves one is monitoring. So do availability monitoring, checking if resources, components, services, hardware is available. Is doing notifications, so sending an alert, like you mentioned, to PagerDuty, to a third-party service, or just using your own hardware, and providing data for availability reporting later on. So you can create SLA reports, you can see how your availability was in the last months. So that's a big picture of Isinga.
Okay, so I would install this if I was like doing system admin or DevOps or something, and I was trying to make sure that everything was staying up and running. What are some of the kinds of things that it can specifically monitor for?
So most of the power from Isinga comes from the plugins, and since we use the plugin interface and the plugins that also Nagios use, most of the power from Isinga comes in that plugins, and there's really close to nothing you cannot monitor. As it goes from service to service, it goes from fuel tanks. If you can see there's still fuel in it, you can monitor doors. You can really monitor everything with a network adapter, or you can have different contexts for that, humidity, smoke. So you can monitor everything. And most of the power is of the open interface and the 100,000 of plugin out there. They have the logic how to do that.
Now, as I mentioned in the opening of the show, this is a fork of the Nagios project. How did the Nagios project come into being? And then in 10,000 words or less, why did Isinga fork from that?
So there are a couple of reasons, but most of the people originally forked Nagios into Isinga, which is about 6 years ago right now. So we're a little bit older than you mentioned, the 3 years.
Sorry about that.
The major reason is that we all liked Nagios. So we like the concept of Nagios, that it's simple in one way. You can play with the plugins, you can try it out. It's easy to play with this, but we were very unhappy with the speed of the Nagios development. There were a lot of patches out there in the mailing list, but nobody implemented it to the main trunk. And there were a lot of issues we saw that our customers, that other project members' customers have, that they wanted solutions for that. They see other projects going on at a better speed. And our main proposal was to contribute to the Nagios project and make things better there. For example, the database interface, for example. But it was not possible. So the major reason was that the development in Nagios was too slow. There was less activity, and this is probably still the same after all these years. And that is the major reason why we forked it into Isinga, because it was not our first goal, because we had an idea that forking a project is very easy. You take the code and you rename it. But running a project is hard work. And we were sure about that there is something going on that it's perhaps more than we want to do, but we feel that we had to do it.
Yeah, and as I mentioned in the opening of the show, you know, there's this, I'm inventing this notion called pitchfork, but it's like when Oracle took over Sun, it's like all the projects were sort of starting to be sluggish and not as well represented. And so, you know, Hudson became Jenkins, Hudson became Jenkins, things like that. They're all like forking all these things. So what specifically was the roadblock to having Nagios move forward quickly enough? Can you narrow that down?
I'm not sure that I did the question right. But you mean what are the major points we were not happy with Nagios?
Yeah.
There are a couple of things. So one thing is that the old Nagios, probably until Nagios 3, doesn't scale. That was a big issue, that Nagios doesn't use multiprocessor systems, for example. That was a big issue, the scaling issue. Security was a big thing, because monitoring is a very good point to attack a system, because it usually can see most of the parts of a system. The web interface, like with a lot of features like multi-tenancy, security, authentication groups, all these things. There were a couple of things, but most of them were scalability, security, and also the ability to deal with large environments.
Okay, that's fair game. So if I have an existing Nagios installation, am I going to be able to drop Isinga into it and replace it to get all these new features?
Depends. So Isinga 1, which is probably based on the old Nagios code, you can do it very easy. We have a migration guide where you can go from Nagios to Isinga 1. This is just to rename a couple of configuration files, and then you're ready to run in an hour, depending on your setup, if you don't have multiple servers for that. So if you're talking about Isinga 2, it's different, because in Isinga 2, we changed a couple of the configuration parts, so most of them, so we come perhaps to that later on. And therefore, moving to Isinga 2 is more work. To Isinga 1, it's pretty easy.
Cool. And so let's say I'm just starting out from scratch. I've been given the responsibility for a couple of systems at work, and I need to make sure that they stay up and running. What am I doing to get Isinga to start telling me what to do?
So if you want to start today and you have nothing, we would suggest that you use Isinga 2. Installation should be pretty forward with most of the distributions. So we have packages for Debian, Ubuntu, FreeBSD, like you mentioned before. It also, we have some guy in the team take care of Solaris. So you install the packages, and there is a sample configuration ships with Isinga 2, which just monitors the local host. But it's pretty easy to set up the monitoring core, install the plugins. So we based on the monitoring plugins project, and then you have a simple monitoring of your Isinga server as well, and then it's pretty easy to roll it out to other servers, monitor them remotely, or install various set of agents there. This is very easy. And also the command definitions in Isinga 2, we have an library, which is our template library. We provide a lot of basic configuration for that the standard plugins, FTP, HTTP, and all the things, which comes with iSyncA 2. So it's really easy just to use the commands and monitor a remote server.
Let me jump in here quickly. So why would somebody who's already running iSyncA 1 would want to switch to iSyncA 2 if it's more work?
iSyncA 2 is not more work than iSyncA 1. It's just if you don't have anything, or if you're not in the Nagios iSyncA 2 flavor and you start from scratch, then I'd advise success to start with a new one with iSyncA 2. If you are on iSyncA and you just have a couple of hosts, iSyncA 1 works good for it. So we are still maintaining it. So it's still under maintenance. We bring in security patches and stuff like that. And with, I don't know, 10, 20 servers, which is perhaps most of the users just have a couple of servers, iSyncA 1 works great. But if you have more, if you have a lot of systems, if you have perhaps a dynamic infrastructure where hosts came in and come out, and if you need to make more and also have the approach that you perhaps deliver the data to more than one user, then iSyncA 2 is definitely the better choice.
All right, so it's more of a just more work if you're coming from Nagios over to iSyncA 2, I suppose, right?
Yeah, that's correct. So coming from Nagios to iSyncA 2 is more work than coming from Nagios to iSyncA 1, because in iSyncA 1 we use the same configuration language and iSyncA 2 not. But we see that iSyncA 2 is in the final version is out since about 13, 14 months right now. And we see that it's really adapting very, very well. So people using it, they started in an early phase with iSyncA 2, now using it in production. So we didn't expect that it's going to be so fast that people accept iSyncA 2 because they have to learn something. The template language changes. But what we see right now and how much we know, which is only know from social and feedback we get on the mailing list and from IRC, that most of the users right now start with iSyncA 2 and they are happy with the features iSyncA 2 brings, and it makes it easy for them to configure host with a declarative language and the template power.
Okay, so let's say for me, who I don't really know that much about monitoring tools, you know, Nagios aside and everything, what makes iSyncA like the proper tool to use if there's other monitoring tools out there?
So one important thing is that in general, iSyncA 2, the approach is that you do an active monitoring. So you look on a specific device in a regular interval, like 5 minutes, which is the standard, or you can do it in a minute or also in a second interval with iSyncA 2. So going to a server every time and check if the specific server or hardware is available. That's just different from a couple of monitoring tools because they work on an agent based where the agent delivers some data from in about 10 minutes or whatever. And another difference is that the community is really huge. So that's a great power comes with the plugins I mentioned before, that you have a lot of, it's easy to find plugins, to find documentation, how to monitor an exchange as well, or to monitor a specific switch. So you have huge support out there, which makes it very easy to start into iSyncA. And we also invested a lot of time, especially in iSyncA 1 and 2, to provide a good documentation. So we have a good documentation, which helps you to get started with iSyncA. So it should be pretty easy and straightforward using the Getting Started guide to play with it and get your monitoring and your first check up in a couple of minutes.
Are you guys still accepting feature requests, or are you planning on doing anything else with iSyncA 1?
So we are accepting feature. We have an open dev tracker, which is dev.iSyncA.org, where users can just log in and open a feature request. If there is a feature request for iSyncA 1, which is not a big thing, I think we try to make it, but we don't plan to make any big architecture changes in iSyncA 1. So bug fixes for sure. If we see a bug and we can fix it, we're going to make it. We were not planning to make any big changes in the concept of iSyncA 1. One reason is because we have iSyncA 2, and the other reason is that we're not happy with the iSyncA 1 code base because it's really, in some parts of the code, it's patched to death, and we have so many things which are broken by design, and that we think investing our energy in iSyncA 2 makes more sense.
So iSyncA 2 is a complete rewrite, or is it just a refactor of iSyncA 1?
No, it's a complete rewrite. So compared to iSyncA 1, where we took originally the Nagios code base, iSyncA 2 is completely written from scratch. We also use a different language. So we have C in iSyncA 1 and in iSyncA Two, we're using C++. For different of reasons, one is that we have get a lot of features from the libraries and from the framework itself, and also the scaling thing was very important for it. So we are working on C++ using the Boost libraries, which enables us to run iSynga on Linux, Unix, but also on Windows.
Okay, well, I won't scorn you over switching from C to C++. As long as it's in some sort of a C, I'm happy.
And, okay.
We do have a question from the chat. Gray 580 wants to know if you can run iSynga in a. Does it require a dedicated server, or does it require could it run on a VM? For let's say,
iSynga could run in a VM without a problem. If it comes to the point that you really do a lot with iSynga, it could be sometimes a performance issue because you get. Probably you get more performance, and also with iSynga 2, you can use bare metal hardware, so you're really able to work with all that power in it. With iSynga 1, you cannot do, and also well, Nagios in that version until we forked it. So yeah, running it on a virtual machine, running it in a Docker works very well. You can do, and we have a lot of people out there using this, and we have also Vagrant boxes available on our side where you can just download the Vagrant app, and everything is configured and works on a virtual machine, yeah. Also, Raspberry Pi is available if you want to do that.
Ah, that's nice. I'm happy for anything Raspberry Pi out there. So we also have another question. McHune wants to ask if Nagios and iSynga 1 plugins can run on iSynga 2. I suppose they wouldn't unless you kept everything, you know, API compatible or ABI compatible.
No, the plugins work. So we use the same. So the Nagios iSynga plugin API is very simple because it's just a return code. It's a message, and it should be performance data. But you can use the same plugins for iSynga 2. So we didn't change anything with them. And if you install iSynga 2 and the standard plugins project, then we provide the basic templates, like I mentioned before, using HTTP or FTP. So the same plugins are used. There's no difference in the interface to the plugins. That didn't change. Just the kind of how we configure iSynga 2 changed from the way we did it in iSynga 1.
And, you know, I just noticed we haven't actually asked you what you do in the project. What's your main role here in the iSynga project?
So my major role is I take care not so much of the development, which is perhaps better for the project. I take care more of project management. I take care that we be in time with our product. And I take care a lot of speeches or go to conferences and try to convince everybody to use iSynga and tell them that it's a great thing. So I'm in the project from day one. So I'm one of the co-founders. In the early phase of the project, I was responsible for the reporting stuff as well, but now I'm a little bit out of time for that. But my major part is behind the development scenes, organizing that the project works well, website and all the things.
So we have another question from the chat room. Might as well keep flushing those out as long as they keep feeding it to us. Thank you, chat room. I really appreciate this because it gives us guidance for what we want to talk about. I mean, we're good at coming up with questions, but we're also good at reading the chat room, which is really much simpler for us. Anybody can do this show, apparently. All right, so we have M. McCune, who said we murdered his name earlier. But he says, I'm a longtime Nagios user. Why should I switch to iSynga? What advantages would it give me? That's a good question.
The advantages are, there are a couple of advantages. So first thing is you have to think about what your biggest pains you have perhaps. So if you run Nagios and everything works great and you have just a couple of servers and it works for you, so keep it. So I prefer iSynga, but it's not, you don't have to. But there are a couple of points which iSynga is interesting. So one thing is if you have a lot of servers you want to monitor. So if you have a scalability issue, and we know that with Nagios a lot of people have that it doesn't scale, they have a long latency in the plugin execution. So that's one big argument. Another thing is that the security problem we have with a lot of Nagios installations, because people use NRPE, use NSA to transfer the data, and especially if it comes to distributed monitoring setups where you have independent Nagios satellites somewhere, security is not so easy. So there's always something you can do a workaround. But with iSynga, especially iSynga 2, for example, we have full SSL communication between all the components, between the agents and the servers. And this is definitely a big advantage. And in the presentation layer, we invested a lot of time in the web interface. So we had Isinga web very early. I think probably a year after we forked Isinga. We also did a lot of improvements in the classic CGIs, which work for a lot of users if they have a small setup. And upcoming is Isinga web 2. It's our new web interface, which will be out there in a couple of weeks. And there we also changed the classical approach, how you deal with the Isinga monitoring interface. So we did a lot there. And there are a lot of advantages you have in Isinga. So performance, if you have a larger setup, the configuration is very powerful. You can have a rule-based configuration where you can, for example, apply specific checks based on specific attributes. And something coming up with version 2.4 coming out in November is that we fully API Isinga. So you can work with Isinga. You can add hosts, you can delete hosts, you can modify them, everything during runtime without it's necessary to restart the core. So we did a lot of improvements there. And with the apification, how we name it, in 2.4, you can fully control Isinga using our new REST API.
I also have to say personally, having experienced both Nagios and Isinga now, that your web interface is beautiful. I tell you, I don't know why the Nagios guys still make it look like it comes from the 90s, but it is. It's just ugly. And then you guys have moved forward. And I also wanted to address that more directly. You've moved to a sort of an API architecture now where your web interface is actually talking over, it's not a CGI bin application anymore, even though I'm sad that it's no longer in Perl, but you know, it seems like it's much more. You want to talk a little bit about that change as well?
Yeah, one thing is that the old CGI is required to have access to the data. I think it reduces like the status stat and retention stat, which has to be on the same server, so you can share it using NFS, whatever. That's mm-hmm. one thing. And one thing that we really want to have loosely coupled interface between the web interface in a language we can handle better. So like you mentioned, the old interface, so the CGIs are written in C, which is really hard to modify something. And if it comes to the web interface, people want to change it, want to add their logo, want to add other information to the web interface. And this is something we focused, especially in Isinga Web 2, to make it easy for people to integrate something, their iframe, their ticketing system, or every other information they can add to the standard monitoring things, that it's easier for them. And then we decided to do that with PHP. The major reason for that was that we are able to do it in PHP, so we had the knowledge, we were mm-hmm. familiar with it. And PHP is for most admins is also simple to run. So you can do Ruby Rails, you can do Java server pages, whatever. But we decided that PHP fits best to our use case.
Awesome, awesome. And we actually have another question from the chairman. I don't want to miss it here. Is Gray580, who has been the source of many questions today, says, and does Isinga feel and features? I can't even read today. Does Isinga feature an IDS that's already doing system monitoring?
An IDS?
Intrusion so you can integrate.
Yeah, okay. I know, but so we are not an IDS tool. What you can do is if you're, for example, thinking about an open source world and using Snort, you can feed the data coming out from Snort into Isinga and probably start an alert. You can do that. But we don't have something on our own. So we take care that we are open. So we are supporting a lot of interfaces to send data somewhere else to, for example, send performance data, send log data to Logstash or Greylog, for example. And we also have a lot of possibilities to feed data into Isinga. So if you have an IDS out there and you're getting some information and want to trigger an alert, you can use just the passive interface, send it to Isinga, and then trigger an alert. That's pretty easy and straightforward.
Okay, and one of the things that sort of irritated me about using Nagios is it was either sort of a yes or no thing. I mean, if you got, you know, three fails in a row, you were bad, but one of the other systems I was playing with, you know, don't throw anything at me, but was Zabbix. And one of the things I know is that it has some sort of formulaic history calculations where you can say if six times out of eight this failed in the last eight tries, then give me an alert. Is Isinga moving more towards that sort of algorithmic style, or is it still pretty much locked into the way Nagios did it?
Right now, we are work very similar. So what you can do is one thing that you can process specific services and host together and create rules. Like, for example, if you have a load balanced farm and say, if more than 5 of 8 servers fail, then I want to have alert. You can do something like that. But from the notification logic, it's still that the way that you have specific soft states. So your sample server goes down and then you have a shorter interval to recheck it. And then after a sudden hard state happens, you can send out a notification rule. This is something which is definitely on our roadmap for the next years, that we want to come to the point that we can have more logic into the core. For example, do an alert if the load is 20% higher compared to the same time on another Monday, for example. This is something we are thinking about in the future. Right now, we don't have that. But this is something definitely on our list to have in the future.
Well, I definitely miss that from Zabbix. I don't miss anything else at all from Zabbix. It was a really ugly setup, and I abandoned it after about 6 months. So I went back to – luckily, I was already doing Agios on one side, and I tried to add Zabbix as just another way of doing the same monitoring. But you might want to look at their way of doing calculations for historical stuff, because I really liked what they were doing in terms of formulaic in roll-ups and things like that. So they already have the language worked out and that sort of thing. So just a suggestion. And actually, what we haven't actually addressed here, though, is okay, so Isinga sees that something's wrong. What does it do then to get me to pay attention? Where does it go from there?
So one thing is you can do is typical something named event handler. So you can, for example, if your web server goes down, you can start a script to restart it. This could be a solution in some point, but to be warned, if you have thousands of event handlers to restarting your stuff, then you probably have another problem and should fix it. If you come to the notification point, you can do everything. So there's a couple of notification script we ship to just send an email. You can send an SMS. You can blink up a light. You can play a sound. You can send notifications to third party tools like PagerDuty, VictorOps, AlertOps, or what's out there. So you can do, close. You can do everything without it. So the typical thing would say it's mail. It's just the standard people do, which sometimes leads to the end that they're a little bit over alerted and try to create some mail rule to delete the alerts. So alerting is something you really have to configure very. You have to think about it that you don't get too much notifications about critical system. But the typical is mail. We use a lot of text messaging to do it, pager. So everything is possible. Or voice alerts is something which is really cool. So it's not the easiest thing to implement, but voice alerts is probably the only thing which is 100% chance to know that the user get the notification. So you can do something like read the message. So do a text to speech, for example, and then say to the user, press 1 to acknowledge the critical error. That is something you can do, and this is pretty cool.
Yeah, actually, I have both the Nagios instance on my one client talking directly to PagerDuty, which then informs me and informs my app on my iPhone and stuff. And here at ZipRecruiter, they're also using PagerDuty as their way of taking the output from Isinga, now Isinga 2, to actually deliver that on. We actually have a couple questions more from the chat room. Thank you, chat room. We have the anonymous Web3150. By the way, you can rename yourself if you're the web user. You can just say /Nick and give yourself a real name. I tried to use Isinga 2, but I kept running into issues of finding all the ports that have to be open so I can use the tool across a number of different systems. Is there documentation you have that includes all the information for requirements and the infrastructure?
Yeah, there's a documentation for Isinga 2. It's under docs.isinga.org. There it is. So if you work, if you want to be connected to other Isinga servers, there's a standard port 5, 6, whatever. I don't have it in memory, but you can find it in the endpoint configuration of Isinga 2. If you just have a local server, it depends on how you want to reach the other servers. Do you want to monitor something? Do you want to get in touch with an agent? But all the ports are documented very well, so it should be no problem. Otherwise, yeah. Get in touch with us on IRC, the mailing list, that we can help you out, or on Twitter.
Yeah. Oh, and speaking of the beautiful interface, I think we have a web page we can bring up for those of you that are watching the video of what this actually looks like. Yeah, you have professional designers working on this project. I mean, how do you get it looking beautiful like that? That's what I really like. So thank you for that. It's just wonderful stuff. Anyway, and sorry for those listening to the audio, which is 90% of the audience. you're going to miss this. Oh, well, just go to the webpage. You'll see it. Anyway, we also have another question from the audience. Yeah, I guess that's what they are, the chat room. And this is M. McCune again. Does iSynga 2 support NRPE and NS Client++?
Yes, we do. It didn't change it that way. Yes, we do. We have the possibility to run iSynga as an agent itself, but we support NRPE, we support NS Client, so we can connect to every client you can do with Nagios or iSynga 1. You can work with iSynga 2.
And one of the things this thing is doing, obviously, constantly is doing all these probes, but then it has some historical records about those. How easy is it for me to, say, take that and put it up on a dashboard of my own? Like I have some collective dashboard of various things that I've got from other tools. Can I get access to that data?
Yeah, there are a couple of interfaces. Right now, a very easy approach is using the database. So we have a database API, which is the IDO, where we can write to MySQL or Postgres. You can query that data. For example, you can use Dashing, which is a dashboard tool, and you can list your current alerts, your current server failures using Dashing. That's straightforward, very easy. But you can also use it to, for example, do comprehensive reports using Jasper Reports or Pendaho or Bird in the part of the Eclipse framework to access the data there. And also with the REST API, you can directly query the monitoring core and get your check result out there and see how the states are, what happened in the last time. It's very open, and it's one of our design goals that we can solve the problems the user have out there, but we want to make it easy to connect to other tools which are popular, like Raphite, like I mentioned, Logstash or Greylock. Everything the user wants to see in there, that it's pretty easy to get in touch with the data.
Very nice. And also from the chat room, the anonymous web 3150 again. Can iSynga 2 monitor REST and SOAP services?
Yes, it can. It can. You just have to use a plugin to do so. There are a couple of plugins out there which you can just query. HTTP is one simple thing. Querying a website, you can, for example, check if the security, if your SSL certificate is still valid. You can also search for specific strings in a website to see if the footer is loaded and the website really is served very well. But you can also query whatever JSON RPC REST. You can just execute a Perl or Ruby or whatever your favorite language is, and just wrap it in the plugin API, which is, like I mentioned before, very simple. It's just a return code, a message, and perhaps performance data to measure the performance of a specific service in a graph later on. But that's easy. Yeah, you can do.
Yeah, I've written a couple of Nagios plugins myself, custom plugins. That's pretty obvious how to do that. And Emma Kuhn again has another great question, which I don't even know the context of the question, but can I use a NAG with iSynga 2, and does iSynga have any mobile clients?
iSynga 2 doesn't have any mobile clients right now. So we don't. There are a couple of apps out there working, so far I know, working with the CGI, which you can do. So you can connect the CGIs to iSynga 2 as well. We have a compat feature to provide the necessary data for the CGI. The iSynga Web 2 will have a responsive interface that you can work on an iPhone or on an Android or an iPad. And we have that. There's no native app right now. We had something in the past, which was something like a Sencha mobile app. We are thinking about that, but there are a couple of third-party apps you can use to access iSynga. And with iSynga Web 2, you have the mobile interface, which is should be able to do most of the things required to do on a quick thing and in the evening, in your bathroom, wherever.
So speaking of the plugins, rather, is there a way for you to distribute them without having to upstream them up to the iSynga project? Or can you also keep them up to date?
So one thing is there is something like a standard plugin package with its monitoring plugins, with its ship with most distribution. This is what the basic monitoring checks are based on. There are plugin platforms. You can share your plugins, for example, exchange.isynga.org. You can upload your plugins there, or you can just set up a sync to GitHub to sync it with your repository. So this is very open. You have standard mechanisms, and then you have a lot of plugins out there you can find everywhere on GitHub, on iSynga Exchange. You can also find them in the Nagios area and can use them. What iSynga does not do is we don't distribute the plugins throughout our system. So you have to take care that the plugins are there. There are a couple of reasons for it. One thing is that perhaps a plugin works different on another architecture. So if you're using a C plugin, the same plugin does not work on IEX if your server is on Linux, for example. So this is something you have to take care of on your own. And we thought about that often, but we decided this is another discipline and you should probably use Puppet, Ansible, Chef, whatever you want to take care that the plugins are there. And you can use the right plugins for your architecture, but you can use whatever you want.
So I'm guessing you can't just point to a GitHub and let Isinga download or update those plugins, even if you set them up yourself.
You have to script it. So Isinga doesn't do so. So Isinga is a configuration part where you can say I have a check command, and the check command probably points to a specific path where the plugin should be, and how you bring it there, it's probably your problem. But if you have a script and download it from GitHub and compile it if necessary, then you can do so.
Okay. Crave 580 has another question, and he says, question, I see that Isinga is installable on Linux. However, is there a distro that has Isinga already pre-installed?
Perhaps not pre-installed, but pre-packaged. So there are packages for Debian, for Ubuntu. There's one for FreeBSD. So for OpenSUSE, for the major Linux distributions, it's we try to have maintainers in the team. Sometimes it's not the last version we have with Isinga, but Isinga is there in the major distributions, and you can do it there. And if not, you can just include our repository and just install it from packages. So it's pretty easy. But in the standard distribution, it's there, and it's just like an yum install or an apt-get, whatever flavor you have. And to install Isinga is straightforward.
Okay. So I'm guessing you don't have like a test image on your side that you can just download and play with then?
Yes, we have. So we don't have right now. I think it's a little outdated and virtual box image. But what we have is that we have Vagrant files and Vagrant boxes. So you just have to clone the Git. Can be found in git.isinga.org. So you can clone the Vagrant Git and just set up the machine. And then we have different setups there. We have a single box. We have a distributed setup. You can also install Greylog. You can install Graphite. So we have a couple of demo setups. You can just play with Vagrant, VirtualBox, download, clone our Git, and say Vagrant up, and then it builds your boxes, load a CentOS image, install the Isinga, and then you have a fully running distributed setup without doing anything. It's just a Vagrant up. So we can do that, yes.
Do you know if there's a Docker recipe for Isinga?
Yes, it is. So there's a guy... there are a couple of on the Docker Hub, there are a lot of images working with Isinga. We have some guy working at Adobe. He's investing a lot of time in providing a Docker image for Isinga. So there is one. I think we linked it on the website. If not, I can later only post it. But yeah, we have an image for Docker.
We should probably get to this at some point. Better now than never, I suppose. what license is Isinga under?
It's GPL, version 3.
GPL, okay. And how big is the community at Isinga? Is it just you, maybe 10 people, 100 people?
So active developing, I would say it's about 10 to 12 people. Then we have people not developing so much code, but they took care that Isinga runs on their favorite platform. So, for example, we have people take care that it runs on FreeBSD, for example, or on Gentoo. We have a guy who takes care of that. Actively really developing is about 9 to 10 people. And then there are others which contributing with translation for the new web interface. We have a couple of people there. Others contribute with just patches, documentation. But the core of the development is probably... yeah, I would say to 10 people around. And the community is, we don't have a lot of information about that. The only thing is we know is about the website usage. So some people using GitHub to install it and compile it on their own. We not prefer that, but they can do it. But we have no clue how many users we have because most of them using it from the Linux distribution, and we don't have any calling home feature to see where they are. So we see it's increasing. We see it's increasing a lot so far, we assume, but we don't have concrete numbers.
How easy is it for somebody to start contributing into iSynga? Do they? I suppose they would need to know C++, but is the code repository in GitHub somewhere, or how could somebody just get into it and start working with you guys?
Yeah, like you mentioned, it's in GitHub. So we have our own Git, but we replicated everything to GitHub. So it's there. So GitHub/iSynga, you can find the repositories for everything we did, including all the branches we're working on the next version. So the development process is very transparent. Everything is there. You can see every issue, every feature planned for the upcoming releases in our development system. Which I mentioned before is dev.isynga.org. You can see that there. And then contributing is very easy. So our preferred way is that you create a login. So we have something like our own LDAP system where you create a login for iSynga, which can be used for all the other iSynga tools like the Exchange and everything, and then just can open up an issue, attach your patch. Then we're going to review it and try to find where it fits in, if it fits to our... If you think it's good enough and it's also helps all the other peoples, and then we just submit it with the order notice of the original sender of the patch, and that's it. So it's simple, and it's also documented on the website how you can register and how you can contribute to the code base.
So M. McKeon in the chat room actually has a really great question, and it leads me into some other questions I want to ask. He's asking, is there commercial support for iSynga? And I think that also leads me to what is the relationship between NetWays and iSynga?
Okay, two answers on that. So commercial support, yes, we started a couple of weeks ago, we started something like a partner network, which is the wrong, it's not something like a partner network, it's a partner network. So we are looking for partners worldwide because we get a lot of inquiries, people searching for training, support, and consultancy. So we created that, and we now have the first partners on our website are online, where you can buy commercial support. You cannot buy a commercial edition for iSynga because this is nothing we have and this is nothing we plan to have. So everything we have is open source, but you can buy commercial support. And the role of NetWays in iSynga is that I think we invest a lot of time in iSynga. We provide most of the development resources for iSynga, but we're not claiming to be iSynga. So that's the difference. And we really treat it, we separate it very strongly internally from iSynga between NetWays. So we have development resources which we put in the project. A lot of the stuff is hosted here, and we take care that the project goes in the right direction, but we are communicating with all the others, with the other team members very transparently. So I would say NetWays is doing a lot of development, but it's open to others.
So basically, you could say NetWays is just like the benefactor, the people that are providing some proportion, but obviously you're still getting volunteer resources from other places then.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have, for example, one guy takes care of the Debian maintaining. He works for another company here, and they gave him time to work on iSynga. So they gave him and offered him time to work on the packages. So there are other companies or other guys contributing to iSynga and have time for it. Absolutely.
Cool. And so I'm going to channel Simon here since he's not available today. So how's the governance work then? I understand maybe there's a separate foundation set up for iSynga now.
Right now we don't have one, so we thought about that, and it's still something we are thinking about how to do that. Right now it's just a project. We don't have a legal entity for iSynga. This is something perhaps the future brings something about it, but right now we don't have to.
And so that doesn't mean that you necessarily would have a separate roadmap from what NetWays wants to do with it versus the community. You're just all sort of in a happy camp together right now.
No, we don't have. So probably we have our experience with our customers. We identify problems. We identify needs we think make sense. But if we identify or something in the professional service identifies a problem, then he opens up a feature. And he opens up a feature the same way like anybody else is opening it. And then the developers figure it out and think, try to find out if it makes sense, if it's really a problem, or is it just a wrong usage of the product. So a feature request coming from a NetWays guy is probably treated the same way like coming from outside. It's same, and the people working independently on the product.
Okay. So what's on the roadmap? What's the big missing features that you actually see? You actually mentioned something about a later release earlier or later this year. What's coming with that, and what do you sort of see next after that? And is this all written down somewhere so I can see it?
What's coming next? You can see it. So next version coming up with the core is version 2.4. It's planned for November. And the roadmap for 2.4 is public. So you can see it on devisinger.org. You can see, go on the Isinger 2, and you can see the roadmap and the features are coming with it. There is no hidden roadmap. So everything exists as a roadmap. It is there. So you can kind of see it. So for the next version, which coming November, the biggest thing is the API, which we can query data, you can send commands, you can add host, delete host. So you work with Isinger programmatically. This is the biggest thing coming with Isinger 2.4. We try to have two major releases for Isinger, which means we have we try to have 2.5 and 2.6 next year. For 2.5, we don't have a roadmap. But we think that 2.5 will be more like a stability and more quality. So we try to invest more in the documentation, more examples. So I think that 2.5 will not bring so much bleeding edge features. It's more focused on doing quality. And 2.6, perhaps we can do something like I mentioned before with that. We're better algorithms in the notification and bringing more intelligence in the monitoring data. But this is something we have no plan. It's just the idea right now.
And so in terms of resources, what are you looking for? You have a particular need of a kind of programmer or a kind of maybe designer or anything? Is there someone you're particularly short of in volunteers?
Probably every good help is needed. That's the point. If somebody has a good idea and say this in the web interface would look better if you place it on the left, on the right side, so we are happy about it. So if somebody wants to contribute for Isinger Web 2, we are looking for PHP guys, or probably style sheet or JavaScript knowledge if necessary. Isinger 2 is perhaps a little bit harder to dive into because it's in C++ and the framework is not super small right now. So there's the code base is something you have to learn with it. But we have people out there sending patches for the Isinger 2 code base. And if we have somebody with the knowledge in C++ and the knowledge in system monitoring is ready to help us, he's more than welcome.
Yeah, and something I don't emphasize enough on this show is that even if you don't have the coding skills that we just talked about, I'm sure you welcome like feature requests because it gives you some guidance about what is still missing in the project. Do you agree?
Absolutely. So if somebody brings an idea, and sometimes you're a little bit blind because you look at it every day, and sometimes somebody comes up with an idea, said, "Okay, this is a great idea. We never had that before." This is something everybody knows, which runs in open source products. We have feature requests that we say, "Okay, we don't think it's good." So sometimes people are not happy how we treat it sometimes because we say, no, it's the wrong misusage, or if they want to have another, I don't know, service state, for example, we say, no, we're not going to do that right now. But we open to everything. We don't just close an issue if we don't like it. So we get in touch with the user and bring it in the feedback state and say, okay, we understand your request. We think about this way. Perhaps let us know perhaps we have different opinions on that. So every time we do open a discussion, but we are not implementing every feature request. So we just try to find out if it makes sense, the strategy for us to implement it.
Wow, cool. And thanks for confirming that. Because I've always asked by people, how do I contribute to an open source project if I'm not a programmer? And I go, I got it one great way. If you're missing something, let them know. Let them know because they might not be thinking of that. We're almost out of time. Is there anything I didn't ask or Guillermo didn't ask? Guillermo, I keep saying it the wrong way. Guillermo didn't ask that you want to make sure it's covered for our audience?
Which is interesting that perhaps I can do a short advertisement that we have an Isinger camp coming up in Portland at the 10th of October. We will run it at the Puppet Labs headquarters. It's a day after PuppetConf. So if you're interested in Isinger and you're a perhaps from Santa Monica. It's not super far away. And when I go to Isinga Camp, it's on the 10th of October. And it would be great if you come over. Most of the talks are online right now. People will tell about how they use Isinga, and our developers will give you an introduction. What's coming up with the new API? What's coming up with the web interface? What will be then released? And that's a good chance to meet us. So we will there with about six people from the Isinga team. So yeah, that's a good time and location to meet us, and would be happy to meet you there.
Yeah, and actually it's funny that you mentioned it. I, when you said Portland, I went, yay, my hometown. It's where I'm at, you know, every third weekend or so. And it turns out I am actually going to be in Portland on October 10th. So I can drop by, no problem. I will definitely do that. Put it on my schedule. That'll be great. Thank you. And okay, great. And I have two required questions that if I don't ask, the audience gets mad. So what is your favorite text editor?
My favorite text editor is Text Wrangler. Are you working on a Mac? Is Text Wrangler.
All right, that'll work. Hey, so the chat room said it has to be VI, but no, not VI. You guys are wrong. And your favorite scripting language?
I'm not a good scripter. I was a Java developer in the past. So if I do something very quick, then I do Bash or Perl. If I do something more complicated, but just more for private and needs, it's hard to say. There are no real needs to code on my own. But then I probably use Java because I can do it. That's the only reason.
Well, I like that you said Perl in there. That is such a rare thing. Most people are like Python or Ruby or whatever else. So thank you for liking Perl at least a little bit to write some scripts in. That's that makes my day. Let's just put it that way. Thank you very much. we're out of time, but I really have appreciated you coming on, talking about Isinga. I know some people are anxious in the chat room to go try this out right afterwards, and now I'm going to be very happy in my move from the N-word over to Isinga. in my own area, and I had to throw that into the stream at least once. So there we go. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for the chance, and have a good day in Santa Monica. Beautiful. Bye bye.
Absolutely. I'll see you on October 10th. So that was Bernd Erk. Hopefully, got his name mostly right. What do you think, Guillermo?
Well, I really find this interesting. I don't really have that much use for monitoring systems anymore. I don't do that hosting thing I used to do quite a few years ago now. But I do kind of like that if I have to build one of those build servers for a project. This could be a nice way to keep everything in check.
Yeah. You could use it to keep saying, okay, have I done a build recently, or did the build fail? And if not, send off an alert, maybe over to PagerDuty or whatever. So, and I keep mentioning PagerDuty because they are one of the sponsors of this show, at least from time to time. So I appreciate their sponsorship as well. But also, it just works. You know, that's the whole thing. You really want something that's reliable and you can get to. And I can sleep at night knowing that we have an N-word system monitoring our servers over there in the cloud somewhere. And I know they depend heavily on Isinga here because we've got machines, 10 web servers, about six database machines, things like that. They all have to keep working 24/7 or ZipRecruiter's customers get mad, rightfully so. So I'm glad that there's this sort of thing. I'm definitely going to look into the new Isinga 2 and see how that's really cool for that sort of stuff. And if you can contribute to the project, help it move forward, that would be wonderful. Anything else before we move on?
No, I think all my questions have been answered, which is good.
Very good. Very good. Well, and of course, you can always replay the show and have them answered again. Same questions again. we had a great, great chat room, by the way. You guys were wonderful on the show.
One of the best today.
Well, yeah, I love it when the chat room gets lively. That's always kind of fun. So speaking of chat room, which is my awkward transition for the week, we just added to the schedule for next week, filling a slot that the Dart team left by moving down further in the year. We added Suckless. I don't know entirely what it's about, but it's a collection of four or five independent projects that focus on simplicity, clarity, and frugality. And we're going to get a couple of developers from that. Might be an odd, interesting show, but at least it fills the schedule. That's really important. So they're on next week, and it's open source. That's the most important thing, too. Following that, we have Crowd Supply, which is about open hardware, a marketplace for open hardware, just added to the schedule. Speaking of monitoring software, we're adding Prometheus, which is the monitoring software that that SoundCloud uses. It was created at SoundCloud, then opened up for the public. We have the leader of the project talking to us about that. And it's both monitoring a time series database. So it has some of the features of what Async is doing, but then more directly, it has some of the dashboard style things for, you know, over time, we've had this kind of uptime, that sort of thing. So that'll be fun to talk to them. OPN Sense, which is a FreeBSD-based firewall. And speaking of forks, it's a fork of pfSense, who we've had on the show, which is also a fork of MonoWall, which we haven't had on the show, but, you know, we could always bring on, I guess, to talk about the origin story for these things. But anyway, OPN Sense is coming on. And then Dart, of course, coming back to talk to us about what's happened over the 2 years since the first time we interviewed them. Casper Lund, the project lead, is definitely coming on. We're still trying to figure out who the co-guest will be, but it'll be somebody very important on the project, absolutely. That's all we have on the schedule right now. We're opening up the rest of Q4 soon, and I've just got to get my specific dates that I'm available so that we can schedule those in. You can go to twit.tv/floss, which is the homepage for this show, and find out from our big spreadsheet linked from there who's on, who's still being scheduled. And if there's a project you have in mind that is not on that list, please do, as almost every one of these projects have done, is you email the project leader or the community coordinator and have them email me, merlin@stonehenge.com. My address is there on the homepage. Not hard to forget. So awesome how that works. We are always looking for more projects. Always, always looking for more projects. You don't know the amount of mail I send out every month just to make this show keep moving on, but I appreciate all that. We have a live stream, as we do. As I said, we tape at 8 a.m. Pacific time. Today is a Wednesday. For the next two shows, it'll be Wednesday, unlike the two previous shows, which are Tuesday. But starting in October, we are moving to a new day of the week. So we've been Wednesdays for, I think, like 6 years, but we're moving to Tuesdays because more often than not, Wednesdays get preempted by those wonderful announcements. It's also best for our co-hosts. So this will be great to move to a new day. Tuesday also will interrupt my week a little bit less. So that'll be fun as well. So again, starting October 6th, I think is the first show. We are on Tuesdays from then on. That is a permanent move. You can follow us at Floss Weekly on Google Plus. You can also follow us at least for a few weeks longer on Floss Weekly on Twitter until I figure out how to get Google Plus information out and into an RSS feed that I can feed into Twitter. That'll stop because Yahoo Pipes is going away. Sad. Bye, Yahoo Pipes. We barely knew you, but that's how I was doing it for now. So we'll have to get a replacement for Yahoo Pipes. If you have a clue about how to do that, please let me know because I need to have a way of reading a Google Plus API hit and writing to an RSS feed. That is the critical parts. You can follow me on Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N, on Twitter. I tweet quite a bit. And also on Google Plus at Randall L. Schwartz. And at least again for the next couple weeks, those are still linked, but they're going to disappear after another 2 weeks following. Okay, hey, that's enough about that. I have a note that says my plugs, and I have nothing underneath that. I'm doing nothing interesting other than just hanging out for like the rest of the year, not even going on. I'm going on a cruise. I'm going on a cruise on my birthday. So if you're in Mexico or San Diego, close to November 22nd, I will be in that area. In Mazatlan on my birthday itself. I'm going to Puerto Vallarta and also to Cabo. So if you're down in one of those areas, let me know and I will keep you informed. That's all I have. You have anything to plug, Guillermo?
Hey. Oh, I'm sorry. Hey. Yes. Yes, what? I'm sorry. No, I'm kidding. I guess people should check out my YouTube channel. You can Google me. That's Guillermo Amaral or Gamaral, G-A-M-A-R-A-L. I'm also on the Twitters, and I have a link to there, to my YouTube channel on the Twitters, and I'll also post it on the IRC chat here. I guess that's it, really.
We're not important places yet. You know, obviously there's going to be scale coming up, you know, next February or whatever, next March. I've got that already on my calendar. But, and of course, OSCON next July. So, well, we're past the conference season now. There's no place I can say I'm going to be. I mean, it's just, it's actually kind of nice. It's kind of relaxing to kind of be in the sort of wind down of the year. So, yeah, it's pretty good. So, without further ado, since we're probably up right against the hour mark here, we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.